Good morning. It is Thursday, the 3rd of September, and I have been up since well before light with four stories that kept pulling at the same loose thread. 1. I did not go looking for a theme, buddy. It found me somewhere around the third one, and by the fourth, it was unmistakable. Let me take you through them one at a time, and I will tell you at the end what I think they have in common. First up, an outcome I have been half expecting for 2 years and still sat back from when I read it. A team at NVIDIA has published an end-to-end specialization pipeline for competitive programming, and the headline is that their system outscored the highest-scoring human contestant at the International Olympiad in Informatics. Not on a replayed problem set from a previous year. During the 2026 competition itself, run prospectively under the same time limits, the same internet access rules, and the same submission constraints that the human contestants worked under. The score was 535.4 out of 600. The gold threshold that year was 361.12. The top human score was 498.27. As far as anyone knows, this is the first artificial intelligence system to finish above the best human on an Olympiad problem set. Let me walk through how they got there, because the construction is more interesting than the number. The pipeline is conventional in its parts, and unusual only in how carefully each part was executed. 22,000 curated competition problems. Synthetic reasoning traces generated over them. Supervised fine-tuning on those traces. Then, reinforcement learning on top. They trained two models. Nemotron 3 Nano, a 30 billion parameter mixture of experts model with 3 billion parameters active per token, got both the supervised fine-tuning and the reinforcement learning. Nemotron 3 Ultra, at 550 billion total and 55 billion active, got supervised fine-tuning alone. Notice that asymmetry, because it tells you something about where the compute economics currently sit. The reinforcement learning went to the small model, where the rollouts are cheap, and not to the large one. The retrospective numbers on the 2025 problem set separate the contributions beautifully. The small model starts at 130 points before any specialization. After post-training, it reaches 291. Then, they add a technique they call GenCorrect, which is a feedback-driven test-time compute strategy that generates a diverse set of candidate solutions, evaluates them, and iteratively refines. With GenCorrect, the small model reaches 468, clearing that year's gold threshold of 438.3. From a 30 billion parameter model with 3 billion active, the large model reaches 502 on the same set. So post-training roughly doubles the score and test time search closes most of the remaining distance to gold. That is the same division of labor that has been showing up across reasoning results for a couple of years now, but I have rarely seen it laid out with this clean an ablation. I want to be careful about what this does and does not show. 22,000 curated competitive programming problems is a narrow target, and nothing here demonstrates transfer to software engineering with ambiguous requirements, an existing code base, and no verifier. GenCorrect depends on being able to generate candidates and check them against tests, which is precisely the property competition problems have, and most real engineering does not. But the prospective evaluation removes the objection people usually reach for first, which is contamination, and outscoring the top human live is a marker that is going to get cited for a long time. Moving on to our second story, and here the direction of travel runs the other way. The information reported on Tuesday that OpenAI's forthcoming model, Astra, uses a reasoning technique called recurrent depth, also described as opaque recurrence. The reaction from safety researchers has been sharper than almost anything an architecture detail has drawn in the past year, and I think the reaction is the story more than the technique is. Here is the mechanism. Ordinarily, a reasoning model extends its computation by emitting more tokens. Chain of thought works because thinking gets serialized into text, and that serialization is, almost incidentally, the only reason anyone outside the model can watch it happen. Opaque recurrence buys depth differently, the model processes the same query repeatedly through a loop, carrying continuous internal state between passes, and produces additional computation without producing additional visible output. Fewer legible traces, that is the whole concern in one sentence. Buck Schlageris, who runs Redwood Research, wrote that he is extremely concerned by the reporting, and he was careful to separate the immediate question from the longer one. He said he does not know whether Astra is meaningfully less monitorable than previous models. What worries him is that if OpenAI pushes the technique further, the option exists to massively increase the recurrence and destroy chain-of-thought monitorability outright. His colleague Ryan Greenblatt made the scaling argument explicit. His biggest concern, he wrote, is a natural progression in which opaque reasoning scales faster than conventional reasoning until the model thinks entirely, or almost entirely, in latent space. Zv Moshowitz framed it as a norm under threat rather than a technical failure. He argued the technique risks breaking a taboo that OpenAI and Anthropic have both worked to establish, and suggested that legislation may end up being necessary to prevent a race to the bottom between labs. OpenAI pushed back on the strongest reading. Chief scientist Jakub Paczocki wrote that the lab has worked to preserve and use chain-of-thought monitoring since its very first reasoning models, and that this remains a core goal of the current research program. The company disputed any suggestion it is moving toward Neuralese, and the reporting itself indicates Astra's use of the technique is limited, with the chain of thought still expected to be readable. Those caveats are real. It is also worth holding on to the fact that every model already does a great deal of opaque reasoning inside each forward pass, and very few researchers treat chain of thought logs as a faithful transcript. What makes this land harder than a normal architecture disagreement is that monitorability recently stopped being theoretical. In OpenAI's own incidents, involving agents that gained unauthorized access to real computer systems, chain-of-thought records were central to reconstructing why the agents behaved the way they did. That moved monitorability out of the philosophy department and into the incident response tool chain. And a follow-up report on Wednesday morning said both Anthropic and Google DeepMind are already discussing the technique internally, which is what turns one lab's design decision into a question about where the field's default lands. Third up, and we move from what a system computes to what it actually does all day. War on the Rocks published a piece by Lysia Bidoshko on Ukraine's ground robots, and it opens with an operation that sounds like the future. In July, an uncrewed surface vessel crossed the Black Sea, put a ground robot ashore on the Kinburn Spit, and that robot engaged targets using a remotely operated combat module with an assisted targeting system. A robot delivering a robot. The brigade that ran it believes it is the first combat mission of that format anywhere. And then the piece spends the rest of its length explaining to why that operation is almost entirely unrepresentative. In the 3rd Assault Brigade, which fields a dedicated ground robot battalion, roughly 19 of every 20 robot tasks are logistics or casualty evacuation. Combat accounts for about 2%. By the 20th of August this year, Ukrainian ground robots had completed more than 100,000 frontline missions. That is roughly one sortie every 3.5 minutes, day and night, continuously. In the 21st Unmanned Systems Regiment, ground robots now handle up to 90% of deliveries. Monthly robotic tonnage in the 3rd Assault Brigade went from 30 tons in January of last year to 300 tons a year later, and that brigade reports every battlefield evacuation of wounded and fallen is now done by robot. This is not the militarization of autonomy that most of the discourse anticipates. The fleet absorbs labor. It does not add lethality. The economics only makes sense once you price human exposure instead of equipment. One soldier was trapped near Russian positions for 33 days. 6 ground robots sent to retrieve him were destroyed. The 7th completed a 64-kilometer mission and brought him back alive. On conventional attrition accounting, that operation looks catastrophic. Measured against repeatedly sending rescue teams through drone-covered ground, it was obviously the better trade. What Bidashko argues transfers is not the vehicles but the integrating layer. Ukraine unified aerial, maritime, and ground systems under a single command in June of 2024. Between January and May of this year, the number of units employing ground robots nearly doubled, from 117 to 230. Common standards let more than 200 manufacturers supply what functions as one fleet and a battlefield management platform called Delta plans and tracks ground missions alongside aerial and maritime ones on data standards compatible with NATO. Her conclusion is that robots without an integrating layer are isolated tools, and robots inside an ecosystem are a force multiplier. The limits are equally instructive for anyone working on autonomy. Many early platforms were built around control ranges of 2 to 5 kilometers. Routes now reach 15 to 20 kilometers through the kill zone at speeds up to 15 kilometers per hour. So a single mission can demand hours of uninterrupted control, and Russia has fielded dedicated jamming arrays against satellite uplinks since the middle of this year. That defines the practical autonomy agenda exactly. Navigation without satellite positioning, hazard identification, and the ability to continue or return home after losing communications. One Ukrainian manufacturer's chief executive estimates no more than 1% of technological systems used in combat are truly autonomous. And today, each additional vehicle generally requires another operator. Operator attention, not vehicle capability, is what caps the fleet. And for our fourth and final story today, Google launched something called the Fairwind program alongside its Gemini 3.8 flash release. Fairwind is a limited access channel that puts Google's most capable cybersecurity model in the hands of governments, critical infrastructure operators, and core technology platforms, rather than the general developer population. The bind it addresses is real. Defenders wanting advanced artificial intelligence for vulnerability work have had to choose between frontier models that are expensive to run across large enterprise code bases and hard to control, or smaller open-weight models that struggle with complex remediation and require building your own tooling from nothing. Fairwind pairs the cyber-specialized model with a harness Google calls CodeMender, and the emphasis throughout is on fixing rather than finding. Google is explicit that it prioritized remediation over offensive capabilities like exploitation, and the reasoning it gives is worth repeating. Spotting weaknesses creates awareness and fear, while autonomously finding and fixing them delivers security. Defenders can generate verified, deployment-ready patches inside their own secure cloud environment in minutes rather than the weeks manual remediation takes. Google reports more than 650 participating partners across three tiers: national cyber authorities, critical infrastructure operators in healthcare and telecommunications and energy and finance, and core technology platforms. Participants agree to conditions, including limiting access to their own security and incident response and penetration testing staff. And the internal results are the concrete part. Google's Chrome security team found the model produced 2.6 times more correct patches to Chrome vulnerabilities than the best commercial models, which are substantially larger. Wiz measured 7.5 to 9.7% higher recall on its internal penetration testing benchmark at between 2.3 and 5.2 times lower cost. Google's own cloud vulnerability research team used it to find a critical foundational flaw in under 2 hours, work that normally takes months. So here's the thread I promised. Every one of these four is about the distance between the number and the world. The Olympiad result matters not because a model scored well, but because it scored well live, under contest constraints, where the excuse of contamination does not apply. The Astra debate is a fight about a capability growing while the record of it shrinks. Ukraine's fleet has a headline about a combat robot and a reality where 19 missions in 20 are carrying batteries and carrying people home, and Fairwind is benchmark numbers wrapped in a decision about who is allowed to run them at all. In each case, the measurement is not the thing. What the thing does when it is switched on in a place with weather and adversaries and paperwork is the thing. There are 139 items in the full digest this morning if you want the rest of what I found. I will be back tomorrow.